Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Dan Bennett for Progressive Northern Insurance Company. This is an appeal from a Superior Court decision regarding PIP benefits. In the case, Mr. Moore was a passenger in his girlfriend's car, was thrown from the vehicle, then later run over, thereby creating a status as a pedestrian. He received PIP benefits from the striking vehicle, as is mandated by Delaware law under 21 Delaware Code Section 2118. He then sought to recover additional benefits from his mother's policy, which was through Progressive, for additional benefits. Progressive has denied those benefits based upon the language of the policy, and the court below held that coverage should be provided in excess of the $15,000, which had been provided by the striking vehicle. I'm going to try not to oversimplify the matter, but I think the analysis here is relatively simple. Essentially, the court has to look at three questions. The first is, does the Progressive policy provide coverage pursuant to its language? The second issue is, if it doesn't, is that consistent with the language of the Delaware statute? And then thirdly, and I think this is really part of number two, are there any public policy concerns at issue? The answer to the first question, I think, is easy. Does the language of the policy provide coverage? I think that Mr. Donovan would even admit that the clear and unambiguous language of the Progressive policy says that there is no coverage for Mr. Moore arising from this incident, because the definition of the insured person underneath the contract is one is for named insureds and members of their household when they are pedestrians and struck by a non-Delaware insured motor vehicle. That was not the case here, so he doesn't meet the definition of an insured. So that puts us to question number two. Is the language of the policy consistent with the statute? In this instance, it mirrors the statute. Section 2118A2D, when discussing what needs to be provided in terms of PIP coverage through a policy, says you have to provide coverage for named insureds and members of their households when involved in an accident as a pedestrian with a vehicle other than a Delaware insured motor vehicle. That's exactly what the Progressive policy does.
Can I interrupt for a second, because I've always found these statutes confusing. How does PIP coverage relate, if at all, to underinsured motorist coverage?
Absolutely, completely different types of coverage. PIP coverage is a no-fault coverage, which is provided regardless of fault, and it is meant by the legislature to provide prompt compensation for those injured in accidents, regardless of fault.
Okay, well, what I'm trying to parse out for my own sake here is that I understand the statute says you have to have $15,000 in coverage, right?
Correct, as minimum limits.
Right, but you can obviously have more, and in fact, Moore's mother had $100,000, right?
Correct.
And they paid more, they paid additional sums in their policies, in their premiums, to get this additional coverage. Why is it then that they can't make use of that additional coverage when they have medical injuries that would support it?
Because what was purchased was additional limits, not additional coverage. The coverage under the policy doesn't change. The coverage is what the coverage is. The question is, what are the limits that are then provided from a monetary standpoint or a dollar amount with respect to that coverage? In this instance, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to expand the coverage. I mean, they're trying to expand the fact that, well, okay, if there were minimum limits from the other policy, then we wouldn't have any coverage under the policy, but because there aren't, well, then we should. Well, that doesn't make any sense, because you can't expand the coverage. You can only increase the limits. And that's what Ms. Moore did in this instance. She increased the limits of the coverage that she had, but the coverage that she had did not include coverage for named insureds and members of their household when struck by a Delaware insured motor vehicle.
And okay. All right. Then let me go at it a slightly different way. If Moore had been struck by a non-Delaware vehicle, would his mother's policy provide PIP benefits?
Yes.
Even if the out-of-state vehicle also had PIP coverage?
Well, the answer is yes, but you don't know whether that PIP coverage would have been applicable to this accident. For example, if you look at 21 Delaware Code Section 2118A2E, which is sort of the extension of the striking vehicle's coverage to pedestrians, it only applies to pedestrians that are struck within the state of Delaware. And if you, some of the cases I cited, the Smith and the Stewart case, also deal with similar provisions in other jurisdictions where they only cover, the PIP coverage in the state only covers those accidents where they occur within the state. So, for example, if a Pennsylvania vehicle came into Delaware and struck someone, the PIP coverage on that vehicle would not apply, because in Pennsylvania, their statute reads similar to Delaware's statute, saying this coverage is not provided for the vehicle when it hits a pedestrian out of state. It only applies for accidents involving.
Is this universal? Every state has worked out a system where we cover our people, and if you happen to be hit by somebody out of state, their coverage doesn't apply, and the same thing happens in their state, so it's all kind of cascading?
I would be hesitant to say it is uniform throughout all jurisdictions. I would say that it appears as though many jurisdictions are similar, and that's sort of the way that the Delaware PIP statute has been modeled. So that, and if you look at it in its natural progression, and you start with 2118A2C, which is the general insuring provision, which says, you know, the insurance on the vehicle has to provide coverage for PIP coverage for everyone involved in an accident with the vehicle, except for occupants of another vehicle. Okay, so that's in general what PIP coverage provides. And then Section D says, but we're going to expand that, because if you're a member of a household or a named insured, we're going to make the policy also cover an instance where you're struck by a non-Delaware registered vehicle or insured vehicle to make sure that you have coverage available to you. And then thirdly, under Section E, it then steps back and limits it with regards to the pedestrians that are identified under Section C, and saying we're only going to address pedestrians when they're struck in the state of Delaware. So you have to look at sort of at those three paragraphs in coordination of the benefits that are going to be provided under the Delaware statute.
And if somebody wanted to get additional coverage in the nature of underinsured coverage, that's not available?
And once again, underinsured coverage would be something different. Uninsured and underinsured coverage is essentially liability coverage, meaning coverage if someone else is at fault for the accident, but the person who was at fault didn't have enough insurance or didn't have any insurance at all.
I understand that, but let me explain where I'm coming from. I have a problem with the idea that our statute is saying if you get hit by a Delaware car that has the minimum required in PIP coverage, then that is all you're going to get. and there's nothing you can do to protect yourself against that. You can't buy additional PIP coverage for yourself that would apply, and you can't buy underinsured coverage that would apply. Is that what you're telling me?
I will say that that's what the statutory scheme envisions. That is what, that's how the statute is written.
And now, does it make sense that the overall scheme here recognizes that one family might be more risk averse than another and more concerned about having greater coverage, so they go out and buy $500,000 of underinsured motorist coverage, knowing that no matter who I'm involved in an accident with, I have my own coverage that will help me out. But there's no way to do that with respect to PIP benefits.
Well, except, once again, if you go back to the PIP statute, that's not what the purpose of the PIP coverage is. The purpose of the PIP coverage is to provide immediate payment of medical bills to the driver and occupants of your insured vehicle and any pedestrian that you might hit.
And you know, in today's medical world, $15,000 gets used up on your first day in the hospital. That means people are unable to buy coverage that will actually meet their medical expenses, is what you're telling me.
No, they can purchase additional limits of coverage for those items which are covered under the policy or are required to be covered under Delaware law. The question is, can they buy coverage which is not required to be provided under Delaware law? And certainly some insurance companies provide coverage beyond what is required by Section 2118. And if they wanted to shop to see what different coverages were available, they might be able to do that. But they can't ask, but you can't require the PIP carrier to provide coverage that is not required by the statute.
So in terms of your client would not have anything to offer if somebody wanted to buy additional PIP coverage for circumstances such as this?
I do not know if that could be negotiated or not, but it's not contained within the policy that the Moores had.
The marketplace offers other alternatives for medical care coverage, though, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Outside of the automobile insurance policy.
Correct. If someone has health insurance or other or Medicare or other forms of health insurance, that provides payment beyond those paid by PIP. And likewise, there's always the recovery against the tortfeasor or through an uninsured motorist coverage or any other available coverage that may be had that was through the fault of another. So it's not necessarily that person is totally out of, you know, not having the medical bills paid.
And that wouldn't have any restriction based on a non-Delaware vehicle causing the injury to the pedestrian?
Correct.
Okay.
At this time, I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
May it please the court, counsel, good afternoon. Keith Donovan for the appellee, William J. Moore. Allow me to provide some practical context for what we're talking about and arguing about here today. At the conclusion of these oral arguments today, when we leave this building and we all walk to our respective cars, one of us may have the unfortunate circumstance of being struck by another vehicle. The question that would arise if that were to occur is, am I protected by my automobile policy, and to what extent am I protected? That's the question that the person who had that unfortunate accident would ask themselves, and that's what we're arguing about here today. Now, in the context of this case, what has happened is, I think we can all agree that no one knows or has any ability to know what the insurance coverage will be on the vehicle that strikes you as a pedestrian. I think we can also agree that each of us draws some comfort from the amount of coverage that we purchased for ourselves, meaning we know that no matter what, we are protected with respect to our medical bills and our lost wages, at least to the extent that we purchased that no-fault policy for ourselves. If Progressive's argument prevails today, what this court will do, in essence, is take away the comfort of knowing what your level of protection is, well, and in fact say, take the coverage away.
There are two facets to insurance. One is the circumstance under which you're to be covered. The second is the amount of the claim that you can make, the limits of the coverage available. You're phrasing the argument as if the only issue is the ceiling of amount of money available. There's a fundamental issue initially, and that is what coverage did you purchase before you talk about how much money you pumped into the coverage that you purchased.
I agree with that. And in this context, what you purchase is, what the Moores purchased was a $100,000 no-fault policy.
But I thought you agreed that the policy is not ambiguous, and that under the policy, if the policy is applied in accordance with its terms, you're done. The only way you get where you want to get is if the statute requires a modification or reformation of the policy.
Well, I agree with the first part of what you said. I agree that the policy, as it's written, says that Mr. Moore is not covered because he was struck by a Delaware vehicle.
And scope of coverage is directly related to cost of coverage, correct?
Well, I would agree with that, yes.
The wider the scope, potentially at least, and logically, the more expensive the coverage.
I would agree with that as well.
So there is no Delaware statute, no insurance commissioner rule, and no contract here that widens the scope of coverage, because what's been purchased is a limited scope of coverage.
Well, again, and that's where I would disagree. What was attempted to be purchased was a broader scope of coverage. What was attempted, now, and again, what we're talking about, there's a couple of different practical versus.
Well, explain that to me.
When
the language of the policy says exactly what the coverage is, how does one attempt to purchase more coverage than what the policy says?
When Mary W. Moore purchased that policy, just as when any of us purchases a policy, because an insurance contract is a contract of adhesion, what we don't have is a negotiation, and what we don't have is the policy in front of us.
Yeah, but what we also don't have is open reformation of policies, because somebody didn't interpret the policy correctly in the first instance and thought they were buying more than they purchased.
I agree with that, but what we do have is the ability to try to protect ourselves further by purchasing above the minimum mandatory limits. Now, in the first instance,
for the coverage available,
the expectation of
the word coverage doesn't mean policy limits. The word coverage means the scope of applicability of the policy limits.
I understand that. And when Mary Debbie Moore purchased this policy, she purchased $100,000. The question is, what does that $100,000 cover? Now, when you look at the history of cases that deal with this issue, there is a consistent stream of decisions that allow a pedestrian to reach to his or her personal policy and stack the differential to recover those benefits. A number of decisions that I cited, one was Hawkins versus Peninsula. Now, this is a 1987 Court of Common Pleas case. It dealt with this exact situation. A pedestrian was struck, collected money from the striking vehicle, PIP money, and then went to his own Peninsula policy to collect a differential.
Was it exact in the sense that the coverage from the vehicle that struck him was Delaware coverage?
Yes.
Then it's not the same case.
Well, it is, because in this case, the striking vehicle was a Delaware vehicle. It was a Delaware vehicle insured by Metropolitan. What the coverage here, what the Progressive policy says is, you are covered if you're struck by an out-of-state vehicle. You're not covered if you're struck by a Delaware vehicle.
That's because Delaware vehicles are all insured under PIP.
With at least minimum mandatories.
Yeah.
That's the logic. But in Hawkins, what the decision was is that the pedestrian was permitted not only to collect from the striking vehicle, but to reach to his own policy and recover the differential. Even though the Peninsula policy had the same provision that the Progressive policy has here, which said that you can't recover if you have access to another Delaware policy.
Hawkins says what it says. Help me understand why we're able to increase the coverage going to Mr. Moore.
Because the legislative intent behind the no-fault statute, which was explained in Nationwide versus Seaman by this court, was to provide individuals with an opportunity to afford to purchase additional coverage if they chose to do that.
Well, then explain to me, please, what 2118A2D means and how it would ever be applied in a circumstance involving pedestrians.
Well,
other than as the insurance company here wants to apply it.
First of all, the no-fault statute, as I read the cases, provides a floor, not a ceiling, a floor of coverage that is required to be offered.
But then you run into the fact that the policy is clear and unambiguous and it limits it. What you're saying, at least as I understand your argument, is that the no-fault law doesn't allow the policy to be written the way the policy was written.
That's correct, and there are many cases of this court that say just that, that attempt to limit coverages, whether they are DUI exclusions or members of the household limited liability exclusions, have all been struck down.
But here the statute also limits coverage. So
the statute doesn't.
Are we going to throw the statute out too?
I'm sorry, the statute doesn't limit coverage. The statute requires, in this context, at least the minimum mandatory coverage. That's the requirement. And Your Honors, if you look at the cases over the years, what we're talking about today occurs time and time again in Bowling versus Allstate, in Jones versus State Farm. In all of these cases, the individual, whether a pedestrian, whether riding a bicycle, whether driving somebody else's vehicle, whether a passenger in somebody else's vehicle, in every one of those cases, the individual was permitted to get coverage from the striking vehicle if they were a pedestrian or a bicyclist, was permitted to get coverage from the vehicle they occupied if they were a passenger or a driver, and in every instance they were permitted to reach to their own personal policy to recover the differential, the excess coverage that they had purchased.
Was the policy language the same as here? And was the statute applicable the same as here?
Your Honor, it is difficult for me to answer that directly because the cases only deal with the issues that were presented to them.
No, okay, I appreciate that. But it's difficult to cite cases as precedent if they're not on all fours with the facts and the law of this case.
The case that's on all fours is Hawkins, and that's the only case that either of us was able to locate that is on all fours with this exact situation. Every other case deals with either a factual context or an exclusion or a circumstance that is slightly different. There is an anomaly here that, and I hear, Chief Justice Steele, I hear what you're saying when you're telling me they didn't purchase additional coverage, but they thought they purchased additional coverage. So the question becomes,
well, how could they think they purchased more than their policy says they purchased?
Because they purchased $100,000 instead of $15,000 of no-fault coverage.
But they knew there was, in effect, an exclusion for other than a Delaware-insured motor vehicle.
And the question then becomes, it's not an exclusion in this context.
I know it's not technically an exclusion.
But understood.
The statute says it's not required under these circumstances, and the policy doesn't provide it.
Well, I'm not sure the statute says it's not required.
Well, tell me why the statute doesn't say what it says.
The statute requires that you purchase at least $15,000 in coverage.
Right.
Now, the statute also says, through this court's rulings, that individuals should be afforded an opportunity to purchase additional coverage. That was squarely the Nationwide versus Seaman case. That's what Justice Holland wrote about. The no-fault statute had two primary purposes: to create full compensation for accident victims and to allow individuals to purchase additional coverage if they chose to do it. Justice Berger asked, I think, the most appropriate question. If you're B.J. Moore, Mary Debbie Moore in this case, was there any way for her to purchase that additional coverage given the interpretation of Progressive's policy that you hear today? The answer to that is no. And if this court says that that's proper, then what that will mean is every single person who has a policy where they try to purchase additional coverage, the insurance company will be permitted to extinguish that coverage in this scenario, because it won't make any difference what you tried to purchase. It will be extinguished by the minimum mandatories.
All right, let me stop you, because there are a lot of cases from our court that stand for the proposition that the idea is to provide full coverage, or at least as much coverage as a person wanted to have to protect themselves. And statute language has been interpreted to require that, or to allow it, depending on the circumstances. The problem I'm having is that we've got a statute here that on its face says you don't have to give coverage if it's another Delaware vehicle, right?
Well, it says that the statute says where that coverage applies, but it requires that you at least purchase the minimum coverage.
Okay, so but what we're talking about is a statute that says you've got to get $15,000 worth of coverage, but that coverage is permitted to exclude Delaware cars, other Delaware drivers, right?
Well,
isn't that what the statute says?
The statute says, subpart E says the coverage is required for pedestrians.
Right.
That's what subsection E says. And that's the section that I believe applies. And, Your Honor, and I don't want to miss your point, but what you're asking is exactly the argument that was going on in Nationwide versus Seaman. In Nationwide versus Seaman, Nationwide said that the public policy of the financial responsibility laws was only to require the minimum mandatory liability protection of $15,000. And this court said, no, that is wrong. Even though the policy in Seaman was clear, as Vice Chancellor Noble talked about, it was clear that there was a limitation on that coverage to $15,000. This court held that Nationwide narrowly read the public policy of the financial responsibility law and incorrectly read that law. So we have a situation, and Chief Justice Steele, it's not the exact factual scenario, but if you read Seaman and you put it right next to our case, Nationwide made the exact same argument in the context of a limitation on the liability coverage. And this court said no, that is inconsistent with the statute.
But when you say coverage, you're talking about a limitation on the amount of money applicable. You're not talking about the scope of coverage.
I'm talking about the limitation on the amount of liability coverage.
The limitation is on the scope of coverage to the extent that the minimum limit is required for circumstances other than a Delaware insured motor vehicle while a pedestrian.
Again, I disagree that the statute provides a cap.
The statute says where it's required. It's required other than a Delaware insured motor vehicle while a pedestrian. So what that suggests to most reasonable people is if you want coverage beyond the PIP coverage beyond the situation described, then you need to make plans to purchase insurance coverage of some kind that would deal with the circumstance that PIP is not required to deal with.
Your Honor, but that, again, I would just ask the court, how is that different than what happened in Nationwide versus Siemens? This court could have said Nationwide provided you $15,000. If you wanted more coverage, you should have purchased better assets.
Because there are no limiting circumstances on the scope of the coverage there. The only question there is, to which pocket do you go to find whether or not the limits available are applicable?
Both of these cases deal with what the financial responsibility laws of this state require, and allow. And again, the...
Let me interrupt for a second. Are you, in essence, relying on the fact, if it's correct, that it is impossible to purchase higher coverage because insurance companies, relying on the provision in the statute, say, sure, we'll give you $500,000 of PIP coverage, but it's not going to apply if you're a pedestrian hit by a Delaware driver?
In part, yes. In part, what I'm saying is there's a practical consequence to the court's interpretation of this particular policy, that if the court reaches that conclusion, in essence, this court has guaranteed that that coverage will no longer exist in Delaware. And what...
What coverage won't
exist? The additional coverage above the $15,000
right. Okay.
will no longer be available because this type of definitional language will be applied.
Okay, so if I understand your argument, it is that historically the insurance statutes are designed to allow someone to purchase more than the minimum coverage to get the extra protection, but that as to this particular aspect of coverage, namely PIP coverage, if we were to reverse, then we would be saying that there is no way to get additional coverage because no insurance company is going to want to give it to you if they don't have to.
That's exactly right. That will be the practical effect. There will be an expansion of this definition in Delaware policies, and it will essentially mean that you cannot purchase no-fault coverage for this eventuality.
What do you mean an expansion?
Meaning
moving from what point to what point?
Meaning
because
right.
What is there other than this obscure common pleas case that stands for the proposition that statutory language and policy language isn't interpreted for exactly what it says when it's clearly unambiguous?
Well, first of all, when you ask what is there, there is the public policy behind the financial responsibility law that this court has written about and says there are certain circumstances under which you cannot limit people to $15,000 in coverage.
Let's not shift the argument to a social argument. What you just presented to us, I interpreted to mean that we would be changing a marketplace scenario that exists today where this enhanced PIP coverage is indeed available.
Yes.
Unless we interpret the statute the way in which some think it reads and some may think the policy reads here. We will be changing the marketplace.
You will indeed. And if you...
Wait, is there anything in the record to support your statement?
Hawkins versus Peninsula, Bowling versus Allstate, Jones versus State Farm, and Gonzalez.
I'm not talking about cases that aren't on fours, not four square with these facts or this law. I'm asking about the marketplace. Are you suggesting that even where the statute reads as it does and the language, any motor vehicle other than a Delaware insured motor vehicle while a pedestrian, that nevertheless in the marketplace coverage is being provided under current PIP policies for circumstances as occurred here and we would be shifting the marketplace?
Yes. Yes, and even though these cases are not on all fours, Your Honor, if you read them, that's exactly what's going on.
Wait, I think you're missing the point here. I asked opposing counsel whether he knows of any insurance company that gives that additional coverage, and he said no. Do you know of insurance companies that are issuing policies that will that take away that excluding Delaware drivers language?
What I'm telling you is the current policies permit someone in B.J. Moore's situation to collect from the striking vehicle and collect from his own policy. The issue has not been brought to the court because there is a market assumption that the statute allows for that purchase of additional coverage when the no-fault limits are higher than $15,000.
Okay, so if just to be clear on this, you're at least representing to the court that as a matter of practice right now, even though let's assume all the policies have the statutory language in it, just like this policy does, that notwithstanding that, the practice among insurance companies is that the one with the higher coverage will pay the difference in a PIP claim.
Yes, with the slight exception, I can't tell you the exact language of every policy, but as the Superior Court wrote, in all of the preceding cases, what you said is accurate, that the higher coverage, higher personal coverage, always has been allowed after the 15 to provide additional excess coverage to the injured party under that person's no-fault coverage. That's correct.
Under circumstances where it's a pedestrian injured by a vehicle other than by a pedestrian injured by a Delaware insured motor vehicle.
The pedestrian part's a little bit hard for me to point to because the only decision.
But it's the only relevant point, which is why I'm asking it.
Well, let me clarify. Gonzalez, which is this Supreme Court case, dealt with a person on a bicycle who was struck by another Delaware vehicle. Gonzalez collected from the striking vehicle, and then Gonzalez tried to collect additional PIP through his mother's State Farm policy. A pedestrian and a bicyclist are synonymous for purposes of our discussion today. They're both pedestrians as it relates to the no-fault statute. This court held that Gonzalez could not get the benefits from his mother's policy because it was a matched coverage, meaning it would create a double recovery. This court did not say that he did not have access. In fact, when you read
the same issue wasn't present.
Well, it may not have been present, but the question was, could you, if that policy was $25,000 instead of $50,000, then Gonzalez presumably would fit within all of the preceding cases that permitted to offset the $15,000 that had been received and collect $10,000 additional, and nothing in Gonzalez suggests otherwise, and it's consistent over the last 25 years of cases that deal with other vehicles or pedestrians or bicyclists.
Do you agree that there's nothing in the record to support an inference by us that the marketplace operates consistently with your argument today, and if we held otherwise, we would be turning the automobile insurance world in Delaware on its head?
I would agree there's nothing in the record other than my answers to your questions, correct?
So if we went en banc on this issue, between now and the en banc hearing, you would be able to produce for us the kind of record that would persuade us that deciding the case other than as you've suggested will cause tumult in the insurance world, automobile insurers, and insurers in Delaware.
I don't think it will create tumult. I think what they'll do is they'll simply insert the definitional language that Progressive has in its policy and thereby extinguish coverage that currently exists because the insurance industry is not reading the no-fault statute as creating a limitation in the context of this case. That's what I'm saying.
So this is the aberrational policy, the aberrational company, and the aberrational fact situation.
It is right now, but if you rule in their favor, it will become the norm. That's what I'm suggesting.
Then my final question, I realize you're way above your time,
yes,
but it's our time, really, not
understood,
yours. Isn't the General Assembly the place to present this argument and let them adjust the statute in accordance with industry practice rather than a court in an unprincipled way read a statute other than the way it reads on its face and a policy contract term other than the way it reads on its face?
Your Honor, I would simply reiterate that the public policy has been written about by this court in Nationwide versus Seaman, and it's clear that the policy permits Mr. Moore to access that coverage based upon what this court has written about what the legislative intent currently is.
In other words, we have the power to do it, and you're not answering my question about whether it ought to be done by the General Assembly rather than us.
What I'm suggesting is this court already interpreted what the public policy was in Nationwide versus Seaman, and if this court applies its own words to this case, B.J. Moore should have access to that coverage.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll be brief. I think that the previous words of this court that should be applied are those that are found in Selective Insurance Company versus Lyons, and that is an exclusion based on an explicit statutory allowance cannot be disfavored as contrary to the statute's underlying purpose. That was a decision reached by this court in 1996 when dealing with 2118A2C regarding occupants of another vehicle, the way the definitional section is written in the statute under C.
Can I interrupt for a second? To your knowledge, is the provision that you have in your policy usually used by other insurance companies as well in their policies? And I realize
that I would hesitate to say always, and I would hesitate to say usual, but we know from the Hawkins case that similar language was used in the policy there. We know from the Gonzalez case that the similar language was used there. But we also know, looking at the Gray case and the Jones case, that sometimes insurers provide coverage for this type of situation.
Because they have different language in their policy?
Because they have different language in their policy. And as Mr. Donovan alluded to, sometimes the carriers don't bother to read the statute from the jurisdiction in which they're writing the coverage. If they were to read the Delaware statute, they would see what they would have to provide coverage for. And as Progressive did, tailor their policy so it provides coverage as required by the Delaware statute.
Okay, one more question. This apparently, or arguably, is the first time that we've been asked to address this question, but you had indicated that a lot of the other states have similar language in their statutes, and therefore, arguably, a lot of other insurance companies have similar limitations on the scope of the coverage. Do you know whether this issue has been addressed in other jurisdictions?
I do not. I do want to address the plaintiff's argument from Nationwide versus Seaman, because I believe that Nationwide versus Seaman is not applicable in this case. Nationwide versus Seaman did not address PIP coverage. It addressed liability coverage. And in that instance, what Nationwide was trying to do was say, look, we're going to give you $100,000 in coverage to the named insured, but we're only going to give $15,000 in liability coverage to the members of the household. And what the court said was, no, you can't distinguish between a named insured and a member of the household by purposes of decreasing the amount of the limits that are going to be available to that person when the statute requires you to provide coverage. Once you provide coverage, it's got to be applicable across the board to all persons insured under that policy. That's what Nationwide versus Seaman says. This case is more akin to the Selective Insurance versus Lyons, which says if the statute says you don't have to provide for it, we're not going to interpret it to say that you have to provide for it. And they go on to say that although, yes, the PIP statute's purpose is to provide compensation for persons injured in accidents, it is not, it must have its limits.
Well, most of the language of the insurance statutes are it's bargained for language between lobbyists for the insurance industry and Delaware trial lawyers. I think we all are old enough and understand the system enough to know that. So this court's role, as some of us see it, is not to be the ultimate social policymaker, but to try to interpret what the result of that bargaining was in the General Assembly. And unfortunately, the General Assembly doesn't always provide us with precise, exact language. If the argument that Mr. Donovan makes about Nationwide and Siemens is the social policy argument that this court does from time to time intervene and create a level playing field no matter what the status of the person may be, and you've explained what you believe Nationwide versus Siemens says about coverage applicable based on status, the only distinction here between the member of Mrs. Moore's family, Mr. Moore, and anyone else that would have the maximum limits available under the PIP of her policy is the fact he was a pedestrian struck by a Delaware insured motor vehicle. why wouldn't the same, everybody who is a member of the household who's financially dependent upon status argument be the same as it was in Nationwide?
Because, once again, you go by status. In Siemens, they were distinguishing between coverage based upon status. In this case, there is no coverage. It wasn't that there was no coverage available, is that they were trying to limit the coverage. In this instance, there's no coverage.
But there would have been coverage available if this had not been a Delaware-insured motor vehicle.
Right. And this goes back to something that Mr. Donovan said at the beginning of his argument, that the Moores went out and purchased insurance for themselves. That's not what happens in a PIP situation. You're purchasing insurance for the vehicle. 2118A says that any motor vehicle registered in the state, the owner has to provide insurance on such motor vehicle. This isn't protection they're going out and buying for themselves or for their named insureds or for members of the household. This is insurance they're going out and purchasing on the vehicle. And that coverage that has to be provided on the vehicle is set forth in the statute. And that is the other occupants of the vehicle, the driver of the vehicle, and pedestrians that are struck by a vehicle.
Well, that's the argument. The argument, as I understand from the other side, is, okay, this is what's required. But there shouldn't be any limitation beyond what's required by coverage in terms of actual dollar limits applicable. We should see here that if you've purchased PIP of $100,000, you've purchased a sufficient amount of money to be applicable to all circumstances under which you would expect PIP coverage to apply. And the only differentiating circumstance here is you don't have to provide coverage for circumstances when it's other than a Delaware-insured motor vehicle while you're a pedestrian.
Well, you would expect that coverage would be provided as required by Delaware law. And that's what you're purchasing. You're purchasing the coverage required by Delaware law. And as the court has pointed out, you can purchase that coverage in varying amounts, but you can't expand the scope of that coverage that once it's been purchased. And in this instance, the Moores purchased that coverage which was required to be provided by Delaware law, and that is coverage if the named insured or member of a household is a pedestrian struck by a non-Delaware vehicle. The statute doesn't require you to provide coverage for a named insured if they're struck by a Delaware insured vehicle.
Okay, I think
regardless of whether it's minimum or excess.
Okay, I think we understand where both parties' positions lie at this point. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.